God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Reed's not good and God's not dead. Don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted logic, and waves still pound upon the sand and will when they're gone. God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond to somewhere in Europe, and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Hello! Welcome to Dog Poet Central and the Saucer Pod. It's been a while since we've done this, and a boatload of experiences have come down the river and gone round the bend. We too have come down the river and gone round the bend, and on occasion, in more ways than one. This is not the same as going over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. It's a little more like Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf, who turned out to not be a wolf, but only a metaphor. I got some enormous news over recent times. For some good long while, there were elements of my behavior that were really perplexing me. I had analyzed it as a necessary process for occasional environmental testing, and it has served that purpose well, fleshing out those individuals that I'm a whole lot better off not being around. In the past, I had let people into my life without vetting them first, and it has cost me dearly later on. Cost me dearly more than once. So aspects of things I did seem to be a smart move, but there were elements in the whole dynamic that took a lot out of me and also left bystanders perplexed and sometimes intimidated as well. Mostly the intimidation was a result of the perception on their part that almost anything could happen. Never did, but a great many bad things in this life have happened to a great many people simply because they were afraid something that never did happen would happen. We're living in the apocalypse, and that would also be called the time of revelations. That means that each of us are being subject to degrees of awakening. The same degree of awakening is not going to happen to everyone across the board. Not everyone is seeking awakening. Those seeking awakening will get a much greater, or should I say commensurate, and you can figure out what's commensurate with what. Those not seeking awakening and even taking steps to avoid it will have awakening thrust upon them also in a commensurate fashion. In most cases, those that are not seeking awakening are going to experience degrees of discomfort, commensurate with our resistance to the awakening they're not seeking. We may not think we have resistance, but there's a huge area below the surface mind that contains all sorts of things of which we are unaware. This is why I work with the tarot for so many years, because it deals with the subconscious and with bringing things up out of the hidden depths. Let's stay on the topic of awakening, because nothing is more important at the moment except primary motivation and attention. Okay, I'll digress for a moment. There's no more valuable or strategic position in life than to be of use. To be of real use will render you immortal, and these are not idle or fanciful words. Therefore, one's primary motivation and attention should be to be of use, to be a tool in the hands of the divine. As a tool of the divine, you're an extension of the divine, and therefore immortal as the divine is. This is a simple logic. If we don't get this, then we don't want to, unless we're utter morons, and that would be a legitimate excuse. Returning now to the subject of awakening. Awakening is directly tied to awareness. The more aware you are, the more awakened you are or will be. Awareness is the yardstick by which we measure awakening. How do we increase our awareness? We do it through constant reminders of the need to be aware and the awareness of awareness. This is why people pray, chant, meditate, or practice any number of spiritual disciplines. They may not think this is the reason. They may have another explanation for it, but it all comes down to a desire to increase awareness, which leads directly to awakening. What is the supreme awakening? That would be the rise of the Kundalini. Sounds like a film title, doesn't it? Once the Kundalini has reached the Sahasrara chakra, the alchemical marriage takes place and true union has been attained. This is the object of yoga, and yoga means union, yoking up. That is the object of yoga. Excuse me, I'm frogging my throat. Ribbit. The science of yoga recognizes the varieties of human personality. This is why there are all those different yogas, Raja, Bhakti, Jhana, Karma, Hatha, and so forth. There are more than that, of course. I've probably mentioned before that there are seven rays, and that each of us is on one ray or another. It's really helpful to discover which ray you're on, because you gain access to certain things with ease and other things with great difficulty. You might want to read Alice Bailey's treatise on the seven rays, or you might want to use a search engine to find out the definitions of the various rays. In a short time, you can discover that there are so many sources you could never read them all. Each of these rays is on a return cycle back to the prism that sent them into the manifest world and to the white light which went into the prism to create the rays. The cosmos makes sense, even though a part of it is beyond our comprehension. Why, if there is such symmetry and resonant harmonics to existence, do we choose to ignore this and not pursue it with all our might? There are various reasons. One is that our desire body overwhelms our spiritual nature. Another is that our karma forces us along certain patterns. We can rise above these patterns, but it takes an extraordinary person to accomplish this, and you have to be willing to suffer for it, but, well, after a different fashion. The thing with karma is that it is not fixed in the way many people think it is. Karma has to do with awakening, too, and we are put through things based on past actions that are geared to free us from the conditions created by those past actions. However, if one should awaken and achieve that which the karma is in place for, then that karma is no longer necessary. Continuous good works will offset karma. The grace of a master can offset karma, and certainly the will of the Almighty can, if you catch the attention of the Almighty, and that is possible, especially in these times. People don't realize how important these times are. One of the reasons for all of this rampant materialism is to hide the importance of these times from the eyes of the people who live in them. That is the devil's employment, to distract you from what is possible for you. 7 billion, coming on 8 billion, are not here by accident. There is a very good reason why so many people are here. Before they came here, they knew what that was. But now, they have forgotten. This is an automatic occurrence that happens to most of us, and depending on your karma, on that depends whether or not you'll be motivated to seek out the meaning of the times or to reach for higher things. In many cases, your pursuits will be only of a material nature. Even if you go to church, it will be perfunctory or simply a form of insanity like the fundamentalists. The cultists and those who follow gurus will tell them what they want to hear, like Rajneesh. People don't like me dissing Rajneesh, but I have a certain pair of eyes, and I can see things, and anyone with 99 Rolls Royces and devotees running along the side of the car with machine guns and 55-gallon drums set about the burning drums set about the ashram for people to throw their condoms into is not my idea of a gateway to the eternal. But maybe that's just me. My opinion of most of the gurus going on today is not very high. People object to my dislike of Eckhart Tolle, but anyone who charges higher prices the closer you sit to them and who walks out of the lecture hall with large bags of cash is not righteous by my measurements. People get attached to certain teachers because they tell them what they want to hear, or they put them into a trance of one sort or another because they're predisposed to that, or they use cities to amaze and impress those who are taken in by such things. I caught a lot of static for speaking highly of Satya Sai Baba, but he built schools and hospitals. He did all kinds of good works. They say he was a child molester, but I actually know the story going on there and the meaning behind it. I know a lot of people who knew him, and I trust my opinion of these people. What did Rajneesh ever build? You know, except that Ajra in Pune where you got to turn in your rupees and buy Rajneesh money, and then you can't turn it back over once you're there, so you have to spend it there before you leave. And what has Tolle built except an economic empire? By their works you shall know them. By their works you shall know them. So many of these so-called spiritual masters are totally self-serving. They seduce people with money into giving it to them and build or buy themselves fine houses and any other accessories or accoutrements that they desire. Their followers are extremely defensive of them. Of course, they have to protect their investment. You should be invested in nothing outside of the God within. And any legitimate guru will tell you that. And any legitimate guru will not solicit money, because any legitimate guru can manifest money anytime he or she needs it. True teachings are priceless. So if you're putting a price tag on them, then they are no longer true teachings, and even if the words are correct, the power will not be in them. People have been trying to make me into a guru for a long time, but I'm afraid my limitations are there, and were I to conceal them, which is easily done, I would be a fraud. If and when God decides to grant me certain promotions that will change the game board, well. However, anyone who sets out to be a teacher before they're appointed to do so will learn very painful lessons and experience definite humiliations that I would personally avoid at all costs. And, well, I've been humiliated, but never for that sort of thing, thank God. Going back to the information of seriously great importance to me recently, it is something that has bedeviled me for years. At specific and strategic moments in my life, I would come under great pressure and be forced to act out in certain ways that were sometimes distressing to some of those around me, not everyone, many people, took it all in stride, and those people are my friends to this day. Other people got really offended or frightened, not that anything they might have been worried about actually happened, because it didn't, but fear is a powerful motivator, and it suspends reason and activates the atavistic. Anyway, my invisible friend showed up and said to me, "Don't you know you have powerful enemies? It's not something I thought about. I've always assumed I was fully protected. I was then told your person is fully protected, as are other aspects of your being, but there are areas that are not, and real havoc can be wrought there. Then a window opened in my mind, and I saw a group of people chanting something with my name included, and I went, 'Oh, wow.' Then I heard, 'Oh, wow, indeed.' I was told that just as I have powerful friends, I also have powerful enemies, and unless I realize this, I could not neutralize the impact of their efforts. I wonder why I've been told this before. I was told that there are certain limitations I have to labor under until I catch them myself, but that also my friends could step in if the situation would become critical, which apparently it did. So I found out. It is a matter of extreme irony that as often as I warn people about telepathic evasion, it never occurred to me I might be the recipient of it. It appears I was using substances and occasionally alcohol as well to insulate myself from the effect of these discomforts upon myself, but I was achieving the opposite result, which is just what the bad guys intended, because these things are a direct highway toward my harm. Duh. Since I found this out and everything has changed for the better, I can't tell you what a relief it is for me. Given what I've just told you, the next thing my mind turned to is, what else is going on I don't know about? So I'm ratcheting up the self-inquiry and exercising a deep and probing focus on everything passing through my heart and mind. It's one of the most difficult things to sustain, a lifetime of attentiveness to that which cannot be seen. I remember when I was younger, there were so many people who were into spiritual things, and time passed, and I watched most of them fall away and into their lives and embrace one dream or another, and the dreams are all they are. Dreams are temporary. Reality is not. Dreams are easy most of the time. Reality is not. Reality is like a painful wound, something you're aware of all the time. If you're aware of it, and part of the pain is the inability to integrate back into a dream because more reality has got its hooks into you, you can't go back again. I'm going to end this broadcast with a poem someone asked me to do, and here goes. It's called Real Love. Love opens things, so love would hurt as much as heal. It would hurt first. Real love, it would confuse, disarm, weaken, and destroy everything in its way. Everything that was, in fact, a part of you that would conceal real love. Real love lasts forever. We do not last as long until we become real love. Real love has come to town, six guns blazing in a town full of lies. Now it's a showdown, the duel in the street. Real love is the only thing left standing. Real love rides alone, squits out of one good eye, nails the coffin shut. Nothing got out alive but real love. Real love is going to make you cry, make it worse before it gets better, tear you up inside. Real love, who would want such a thing? It takes the atmosphere away, breaks all your toys, burns down your house, steals your car. But you're not going very far anyway. Real love has got its hands on you, burns from the inside out. Nothing left. Nothing but wide prairie and huge commanding stars. You've never been so alone. You've never been so complete. Outside this golden ring, the cities burn forever. And you can never fall asleep again. Real love. Oh, well, that frog in my throat is just jumping around all over the place. And, we've once again gotten to the end of whatever it is we do here. And I want to really apologize to all of you for having been away from these radio shows for so long. You know, once something goes away, it takes you a little while to get back into it, and I just wasn't in a position to do them in India because I forgot to bring my recording software with me, which was a dumb stunt. And that's something I'm capable of, dumb stunts, you know. And but I'm trying to quit and not doing too many more dumb stunts anymore. I've changed a great many things in my life, and I just cannot tell you how much better I feel. I'm just free of a lot of stuff now that was plaguing me for a long time, and I'm just really, really pleased about that. And hopefully you'll see that reflected in my work. That's what I'm hoping anyway. And I want to thank a lot of you for sticking by me when, you know, there were options not to, and, untruths being told, and, you know, just a lot of crazy stuff going on, and not happening just to me, happening to all kinds of people. Okay, we have come to the end of one more transmission, and I'll see you next week, if there is one. Until then, may you be surrounded by a golden light that carries you through all of your footsteps back into the kingdom of God. That said, Om Amitabha! Greetings, Lord Krishna! Hail, Lord Jesus Christ! La ilaha illa Allahu! Rock on, Lord Ganesha! Many greetings! Bawala! Aloha and Haru!
Yeah. God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. God's not dead, merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.